Hockey and music go hand in hand. I mean, you can't even start a game if you don't have a hard pumping song to get you going. And of course, the music for the Mother Puckers openings and closing song, Havoc by Sean Tubbs, sounds even better thanks to J-Rocket Audio Design's pedals. For you hockey moms out there who also have guitar players, there's no better pedal on the market to help your budding Jeff Beck sound like Jeff Beck than with the JB Archer from J-Rocket Audio Designs or any of the many award-winning pedals produced by them. Other than the sound, the best part is they are made in the USA. All you have to do is go to rocketpedals.com. That's with two T's, R-O-C-K-E-T-T, pedals, P-E-D-A-L-S.com, to hear and see the products, find distributors, and enjoy the website experience. And if you purchase a pedal from JRAD, please use the code PUCKERS because that is going to get you 10% off of your purchase. And I will personally thank you on my podcast. And when your little player plays himself a little song or records it, send it on in. I'll make a compilation and put them all out on the podcast in the future. Thank you to J-Rocket Audio Designs for being the first Mother Puckers sponsor. Welcome to Mother Puckers, the first and only podcast for hockey moms by a hockey mom, and that's me, Julie Bardowski, alongside the hockey apostle and the 13th disciple, Lou Mangialuzzo. Welcome to the show. Hello for the week. Hello, Mother Puckers. Julie Bardowski here. Lou Mangialuzzo will join us back starting up in October. So it is me, and guess what? I'm back in Nashville. Oh my gosh. So if you've been following along, and if you haven't, you should go back and listen, because then you can follow along and understand what I'm about to say here. It has been a very busy time in my life, and it's been... I feel like I should break out in the Sinead O'Connor 7 hours and 13 days. No, it's been 8 days since dropping the kid in Sioux City, Iowa. And I have to say, the greatest thing is to move immediately after you drop your kid off, no matter where it is you're going. So plan on that. Empty nesters, if you see that empty nest coming up, put that house on the market, find a new one, move the day after your kid leaves. So it's just, so it kind of has been a blur. Haven't really been able to sit down and like let the feelings roll over me. I have cried a couple more times. I've been keeping up with them. They've had their first couple of games and that's been good. And getting to keep up with all the other kiddos across all of the different teams and where they're all playing all across the country. It's one of the greatest things about this hockey community is you make your friends and you see kids that you've seen forever and you see where they're playing, and all every year kind of changes unless you're in Boston or Minneapolis. It definitely changes year by year in Detroit. But it's just such a cool way to go. And I just wanted to share a couple things that I have missed about Nashville. Now, first off, I have been here now for a week, and I have not yet been to my favorite place on the planet, Urban Market, and I still can't believe I haven't been there yet, but it has been really, 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 really busy. I am unpacked. Thank you very much. And, oh, there's still a couple boxes. I think they're my hockey mom coats are still in the hallway. I have not unpacked my hockey mom coats because I don't quite need them yet. But Urban Market, and then I did not realize how much I missed the Tennessee accent. There are different accents in the South, and the Tennessee accent is just so beautiful to me, and it just really gives you that sound like home. And everybody is so friendly. I was walking Dave on our trails. We've got these massive 28 miles of trails near our house here, and walking him. I'm seeing the regular people. They're like, where have you been? What have you been up to? Blah, blah, blah. And so then everybody's saying hi, everybody waving, everybody nodding, even if they've got the headphones in. Love, love, love that about the Southern Charm. Yesterday morning, about 50 6th, 7th, and 8th graders were out for an early morning run at 7 a.m., and I think classes start there at 8:35. So 7 a.m., these guys are on the trail running to a kid. They all went goo goo gaga over Dave because he is quite the showstopper if you ever had have a chance to meet him. But it was just so sweet. All these cute kids just, hi, good morning, ma'am. Have a good day, ma'am. And I used to be so offended by being called ma'am until I moved to Tennessee. And now I've realized I've missed it. I've missed the accents. So, and the green trees, and that's all wonderful and good. So those are things that I'm really glad to be back to. So moms, your continued growth path is whether you're in it now, in it next year, in it 10 years from now, when you're going to be doing the letting go season that a lot of me and my friends are doing right now. And thank God we are in our own little sorority. I love you, ladies. We are all together. Stay strong. But your advice is get your list of three things that you're going to do once your child has left the nest and put it up there. Make sure you do it and move immediately so that you're packing, unpacking, packing, packing, and unpacking, and packing some more. And then just, I don't know what comes next, but I'll let you know. I'm just grateful for the network of friends that I've got. And so I will lead into today's episode. So continuing on our month of September's focus around mental health and suicide prevention and awareness, today we have Danielle Demko. You might recognize the last name Demko because it belongs also to her son, Thatcher Demko, who is the stud goalie at the Vancouver Canucks, had gone to Boston College, played a year in the program, left home at a very young age, and you'll hear how Danielle handled or didn't handle it, or handled and didn't handle it, because that's kind of how it goes. You're like handling it 1 minute, and 1 minute you're not. And she has so much wisdom to share about the story about her son, but then also with the things that she's doing, you know, to kind of help you moms, and I know there's dads out there too, so thank you all for listening, to, you know, recognize some of the patterns of mental health and some tactics and tools that you could use are within this episode. So I, without further ado, am happy to introduce my new friend, Danielle Demko. Hi, Mother Puckers. This week, we have Danielle Demko joining to talk about how her background as a pastor, a people reader, an HR guru, a mental health advocate, a champion of connecting mind, body, spirit in the journey of life, a coach, a team builder, mom of Vancouver Canucks goalie, and new dad, Thatcher Demko, how that background gives her this invaluable experience to be a part of our September focus on mental health and suicide awareness. We're going to talk about how her background laid the groundwork for our discussion around what it's like to work with young athletes and encourage mental health and resiliency, and the specifics of what it's like to be in that role of a goalie mom and what to consider to be the most, what I consider to be the most stressful position in hockey. Not so much the goalie, but the goalie mom is the most stressful role in hockey, right?
That's right. That's right.
You know, and I, and if you're watching this on the YouTube, you'll see I have boxes and chaos behind me because I'm now back in Nashville after 2 years up north. And so when I saw that you also have a master's in behavioral psychology, I'm like, oh my gosh, we should have you come down here because you will get a whole view of my personality.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man. So how are you today? How are things? You're in Austin, Texas right now, right?
I am. I'm in a town outside of Austin. It's called Bastrop. Good.
So you're in Bastrop. I've been near there.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah.
So I'm outside of Austin. I've been here 18 months. And so my master's is actually in industrial organizational psychology.
All right.
It's basically the psychology of the workplace, of the organization.
I got
and you. What motivates people and what, so how do you build teams in a work environment and how do you manage the individual and help them grow in the midst of being in a team, you know? So it really was a great segue because I, you know, was a collegiate athlete and I've helped, you know, I was helped run a huge, it's still big to this day, Coast Volleyball Club. And then when my son left home, he left home early, then my season and his season overlap. And so I thought how I got to figure out, I couldn't coach athletes anymore because I couldn't do my season volleyball, women's volleyball. And so I realized, oh my gosh, what I'm actually doing in the workplace is I was in HR and I was director of training and development and I was helping teams. They were just in a different form. Yeah. So now I'm helping to build teams in the workplace and helping with individual. And I'm having to, you know, like when you're a coach, you have to assess and develop talent and then you have to cut people and you have to see where, you know, have they, from my perspective, which is simply my opinion, right, of someone, am I done able to develop them? And then do they not, they're not on the team anymore. So it's like I translated that into the workplace. So anyway, yeah, so that's what I did for a long time. And then I left that org. I was there actually 15 years. And then I now currently am helping to run a property outside of Austin. I work for Optimum Health Institute and I'm their executive director, running the property here in the Bastrop Cedar Creek area.
So is that, wow. I mean,
there's a lot there that you could tap into.
Yeah, there really is. And, you know, and it's funny because how I got to be introduced to you and then by meeting you and talking with you, there's a lot of similarities that I kind of wanted to like roll out. I lived in San Diego for a very long time. I played beach volleyball. I lived in Dallas and I also worked in Austin, you know, quite a bit.
Oh my God.
I know. We have hockey. We're both blonde. We both have one son.
Mom.
I'm not a goalie mom. Nope. My kid tries to score on your kid. So
that's true. That is true.
We're both workout freaks. Our kids are with the same agency. Well, advisor at my level, an agent is your level. And our mutual friend who connected us, Allison.
I know. Like, that's all very random. Our paths probably have been going like this
Yeah.
For a few years now, and it's like finally it intersected.
Yeah, it's interesting how the universe works, right? And then,
I know.
Well, and what I loved, so the listeners know because I've been sharing my journey of sending my son off. And what I, when we spoke a couple weeks ago, it was a day when I was just kind of like, oh, and you had just great things to share with me on that. So I know that this conversation we're going to have with the listeners, you know, continuing on with your background is just going to be so important and meaningful for them. So thank you for being you.
Awesome.
So I wanted to ask you, going back, so
yeah,
a lot of hockey moms have to work. Hockey is an expensive sport. And when you had Thatcher, you were working at the Coast Volleyball Club first, and you mentioned how your seasons overlapped and everything. How did you manage, especially being in Southern California, with all of the travel for hockey plus your role as a professional?
Right. So my role at Coast Volleyball Club is I was their executive director. And I, Thatch was young when I was there. So I think he was maybe seven, just starting his travel. He started traveling at the age of eight and made a travel team. Yeah. And so, so at that time, that would have been 2003, I was just starting work at the Rock Church. I was newly, I'd just gone on a missions trip. I'd gone out to Africa and I was like, oh my gosh, that's really what I thought, you know, I want to help people believe in themselves beyond what they can see, you know? And it really translated to so many areas. So I left Coast Volleyball Club and went over to the Rock Church. And that's right around the time when Thatch started traveling and moving into that. His first international tournament, he was 10. And so that's when really things started to kick off. But yeah, that navigating, you know, working and practice and, you know, I think really, and his dad, he is an awesome dad, and his dad really his dad has dual citizenship with Canada. So that was the influence. Okay. That's a question I do get a lot is, how did a kid from San Diego not only make it to the NHL? I mean, of all, like, that path was not easy because he was from San Diego, people didn't respect his game.
Oh, for sure. You know, he was what, 10 years ahead of the group now, because now California has been producing some really impressive hockey players. Just at the U18 Helenka Gretzky Cup this past year, there were six California kids on that team. And LA Junior Kings won the Q their year when they were up playing in it. So your son was an early ambassador and trailblazer in the state of California. But they do all tend to leave. So you start.
They do tend to
leave at a point.
Well, they have to.
Yeah.
They have to because it isn't a hockey hotbed.
Mm-mm.
And it really isn't. Now, the whole reason LA got better and got on the map was because Gretzky was traded there.
Oh, for
and
sure.
And he really, he didn't leave Edmonton, but when he got traded, that was just such a big, dramatic thing. And when he went to the Kings, then he started to, you know, his kids were being raised there and he was starting to, he is such a big influence. And so that just was like a little tidal wave coming along.
Yeah.
And, you know.
No better leader, right?
Yeah. So
for that,
you know, I know. And so now with Luke Robitaille, you know, they were teammates. And now with Luke Robitaille, that's where Thatcher first left home. He went to play LA Junior Kings.
Okay.
So he left And really, I mean, he left in August of 2011. But in October is when Omaha called him. They're in the middle of drafts and trades, and that's when they called him. So he had only played junior selects for like 2 months, LA selects.
Wow.
For 2 months. And then everyone, you know, different moms and parents were calling his dad and I and just telling us we were selfish. And
because,
yeah, just because
you, I mean, you left.
Yeah.
Oh, we had that same situation.
Didn't have a goalie. Yeah. And it, mm-hmm. it was a really hard decision for yeah. him, you know? But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, I remember the day he called me. I was actually coaching, and I remember him calling me, and I think I told you that story, but I was just, he's like, you know, he called me and said, "Hey, Mom, you know, Omaha's calling." And, I was about to turn in my lineups. I was about to start a match right before the coin toss. And I was like, "Oh, my son doesn't normally call." He knew I was coaching. So I went in the bathroom to take the call, and he just said, "They're calling me up." And I said, "Yeah, too bad. I'll be done with my match at whatever time. And in 2 hours, I'll call you. We can discuss it then." He's like, no, you don't understand. Like it was a Wednesday. He said, "They want me to report I need to be there by Monday."
And he was only 15 years old.
Yeah, he was 15 at the time. And so I was kind of like, you know, I went on this whole, like, they don't know, you know, you're 15, those kids are 18 to 21. And, yeah. you know, they want to party and be with girls. And
yes.
you have bigger goals than that. I was just doing this whole, like, panic.
I did the same thing.
Sure. And he was so smart. He was super quiet. Uh-huh. And he waited, let me calm down. He didn't engage me, which I love that about that kid.
Yeah.
And then he said to me, "Mom, this doesn't happen to kids from San Diego. You have to let me go."
Oh.
And I was like, "No."
Knife in the heart.
And I'm like, "This kid is using my own psychology on me."
You taught him well.
Yeah. I was like, I just sat there for a second, and he goes, "I know, it's scary. Call whoever you need to call."
Yeah.
"But I'm going to be there Monday." And I was like, "Meh."
Oh, he was 15. How did that work? Because I thought to play in the USHL, you had to be at least 16. Was there, I don't know how that works.
It was October of 2011, somewhere in October, it could have been toward the end. He was turning 16 in December. So I don't know. His dad would be able to answer. Like, his dad was the king of logistics and rules and everything. So
yeah.
I really was like the spectator, yeah. like legit mom.
Yes.
Like, not a hockey mom. I was just a mom
yeah.
from Southern California who really hockey is just not something you even talk about.
Oh,
I mean, it's just yeah. not, it's much better now, mm-hmm. but yeah. And his dad, I remember the first article on him that Omaha released was he was on the cover of the sports page, and it said the new goalie has keys to the offense or keys to the defense, but doesn't have keys to a car. Like, he can't drive.
Hey, that was actually good writing by a journalist. I like it.
That was a pretty catchy, like, headline.
Yeah.
So, I know.
So oh, my gosh.
Cute. Yeah, well, that's when I joined Twitter. That's when I joined social media, because the kid doesn't tell you anything. And You miss all the articles in the media, and it's like,
yeah.
Anyway, so oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you relate another story during that time, right when he had left and he had called you and he was struggling a little bit. And mm-hmm. share with the listeners how he handled it with you.
Yeah. Well, this is when, so he had left home. He'd probably been gone a month. He was in LA actually. And, so he was playing for selects, And he just was super struggling and homesick. And he was in a, I was glad, because I think most of his life, he hasn't let anyone into the ache of what it takes to get to where you want to go, and the vulnerability of it. But this particular day he called me, and I was at home, and he was just struggling, upset. And I said, son, I'll get in the car right now. I'll be to you in 2 hours. And I was choking back tears, wanting to get to him. And he got quiet for a second, and he goes, Mom, you can't come. I have to go through this, because this is what's going to make me strong. This is going to help me get to where I'm going. It's all of it is what gets us to where we need to be. And I'm like, who are you?
Oh my gosh, that's so
I remember
wise.
Just weeping, and it, like, something deep inside me knew he was right, but my mom instinct was like, I will go to jail driving as fast as I can to get to this boy right now.
Oh yeah.
I'll never forget it. And I was just like, and I think he attributes everything is what's making him stronger. Every heartache, if it's with, you know, a coach or a teammate, he doesn't usually have heartaches with teammates. He gets along really well with his teammates. But you know, if it was a girl, if it was a coach, a situation being overlooked because he's from Southern Cal, whatever the thing is, mm-hmm. you know, if apples to apples, he's not the kid being picked. Do you know?
I know that.
If he was a little bit better, he wasn't the kid that was picked.
Yeah.
I did see that.
Yeah. And so he just used that to build his own resilience.
He used it all.
Wow.
To, everything to him was making him stronger. Everything.
Wow. So before the Lancers, and, you know, going to the Junior Kings, because we talked about how everybody has to, you know, eventually leave Southern California. Had he looked anywhere else? Had you guys looked for him to go anywhere else before that opportunity came up?
We visited Shattuck, which I think your son went to Shattuck, right?
Yeah.
So he went to Shattuck, but same birth year is Marty Brodeur's son.
Oh, well, there you go.
So he's like, am I going to go back up? My idol, that was like the guy, his posters were all over my son's room.
Oh, that's awesome.
So is he like, am I going to back up that kid? I'm not trying to go somewhere and back anyone up. I'm trying to go. So I think that was we visited another place that was actually, his dad will remember the name, and probably my son would too. But we went to a few places, and then we came back, and then we were told, you know, different USHL teams said that they were going to draft him. Even NTDP, he tried out for that team and didn't make that team, didn't get drafted. So he ended up, that's why San Diego, didn't have, the high end, the highest end hockey for him to play. So that's why he had to go to LA.
Right.
And so he was, you know, so anyway, I think that answered your question, but, so he looked at a few, he was trying, what his dad did that I thought was, you know, all the pieces work together for things to work out. You know, there's so many things that have to line up.
Yeah.
Just parents' willingness alone to sacrifice the family for this, for the chance at it. It's not even a guarantee. So it's like, you know what I mean? And that's why I think, you know, what we did with Thatch was like, I remember his dad always saying, if you're hungry, I will feed you. Like, if you want this, I'll get you what you need. Like, if it's mental coaching, if it's if it's more private lessons. And so his dad drove him a lot up to LA for privates. And then whenever the team was in a town for a tournament, Minnesota, Detroit, his dad would look up goalie coaches there and get him a private just while he's in town, just to get him more exposure, because, you know, goalie is so specific. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's trying to be a skater in SoCal,
right,
or a defenseman,
right,
which is even a smaller group, but it's the goalie, which was so specific, you know, mm-hmm. As far as, you know, just skill and mindset, mm-hmm. It's a whole other animal. So, anyway.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting too, because I wonder if, because Southern California at that point yet still wasn't a hotbed, because one of the things for developing goalies that I've learned from other goalie moms is the more shots they see, the worse that the team is that they play on, the better opportunity for development that the goalie has. Is that?
Yeah, it's true.
Okay.
And well, that was always the perspective. It's like, whatever level you're at, like the more reps you can get. And I mean, I know that just as a coach, that's what you're doing in practice, is you're just hitting ball. For me, I'm just hitting balls at the girls and working on footwork. So you're just, everything is train response. And the same with him, you know, anytime, if there was like, he was on the cusp of like being on a great team, but he's backing up, versus being a step down, but playing all the time and learning how to lose.
Yes.
That's how do you be key. A good teammate when the team's losing? Mm-hmm. Like, those are such like gnarly skills to develop.
Right.
And so he would opt for, where am I going to get the most reps?
Oh my gosh.
He would do, rather than, our egos want us to be on the best team, or to be able to say our child's on the best team, or, you know, and it's like that, if we can get the ego out of the way, there, whether they play well or don't play well is not a reflection of us.
No, it's not. But, and oh my gosh, let's say that again. Say that again. It's not a reflection on us, what they're doing on the ice.
Yeah. 100%.
It's gotta be their journey.
It is their journey. And as much as we want to control it or navigate it, what our kids need is us to love them no matter how they play. Love them no matter how they, performance not being the thing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Know? You're, that's valuable advice right there.
So huge. I remember when Thatcher, we got to the rink one day, it was super, you know, San Diego, 3 sheets of ice in the entire county.
And Poway's closed now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Well, Poway wasn't around. San Diego Ice Arena.
Yep.
It was San Diego Ice Arena. The Isoplex is what's closed now.
That's right. Yep.
Isoplex. And then UTC, which is our mall,
yeah,
really wasn't producing teams. So it was like we had 2 sheets of ice, basically.
Right.
There was a sheet, like Croc has a sheet too out in La Mesa. We went there for tournaments, but his training was San Diego Ice Arena, and then the San Diego Gulls.
Yeah,
they trained up at the Isoplex in Escondido at the time. This is, you know.
Yep, it's still there.
Whatever.
I think we were just there last summer.
Yeah. What were you asking me?
Well, no, we were talking about supporting them.
I wanted to tell this story. When Thatch, he must have been like, I don't know, 6 or 7. We were playing like little, you know, he was on a team, and we had to get to the rink early, like 4 a.m., 5 a.m. And so he was down running around. The parents are all huddled in parkas and coffee, and the kids are running. They don't know what time it is, and they're running around. And all of a sudden, he comes running up to the bleachers to me, and he goes, "Mom, that boy, he called me stupid." And I said, "He did." And I said, "Are you stupid?" And he goes, "No." And I go, "Yeah, that boy can't tell you you're stupid."
Oh, there you go. That's a perfect lesson. You got to believe in yourself.
Well, and I had said, what do we do with people when they're grumpy? What do we do? And he goes, they need more love.
Yes. Yes.
I go, yeah.
It's hard sometimes.
When people are grumpy, they're telling on how they feel about themselves.
You know, I just saw this sculpture. I don't know if it's from this year's Burning Man, since that was such a debacle, but it was from Burning Man, and it was a sculpture of like a grated, like a chicken wire fencing of a human man and a human female sitting back to back in their hands like this, like they were in a complete disagreement. But then on the inside of the chicken wire were two of their inner child basically represented. Wow. And they were facing each other and trying to hold hands through the chicken wire. So even when we're in that disagreement, like what you're saying, our inner child is looking for that connection and then that love. So
that little one, male or female, is in there all the time going, am I smart? Am I pretty? Did I do good? Mm-hmm. Do you like me? Mm-hmm. Am I special?
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how old we are.
No, it doesn't.
And so, that ability to develop, and words like, I'm proud of you, or man, that was so, a lot of times, like when I say to my son, I like to tell him, you know, I'm proud of him and things like that. I whisper to him, you're my favorite, or even now, because now he'll be 28 in December. And it's like, you know, you think that kid doesn't need to hear it.
Oh,
but he does. He still needs to hear it from his mom.
Absolutely.
From his dad. Mm. Still. It's just, and sometimes he'll be like, you're supposed to say that. And I'm like, I just smile, because it's like, I, whether he receives it or not, his little boy needs to hear it still.
Oh yeah. But, oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's really great.
Yeah. So, but it's good.
Well, speaking of his age, and this is like all clicking together. So he was at the Lancers for a year when he was 15, 16. And then he went to NTDP.
Yeah.
So 28, was Seth Jones on that team? At the NTDP?
The NTDP?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a hard...
Because he's 28.
I don't...
I'd have to look it up.
Is he a forward?
He's a D.
No, I would have known. Yeah. I know the D because... if he's 28, though, because, you know, NTDP is birth year pure.
Right.
My son's a 95.
Yeah, I think he might be a 94.
He might be a 94,
yeah.
Which would have put him in that year before.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah.
Because Amy's a good friend. She's been on the show a couple times. She's a good friend. And so
I was thinking they've overlapped along the way, but I don't know where right now.
Okay. Interesting. Well, and that's interesting in and of itself, because it's extremely rare for someone to come in from the outside to the NTDP who didn't do the first year and come in at the second year. How'd that happen?
Yeah, well, he always went to the Strelo camp, which is the USA Team USA goalie camp.
Yeah.
So he was totally on their radar, and that's why he thought he was going to make the team, but he's in the USA system.
Right.
And so he went to Strelo camp after he was with Omaha for a year. And I remember him, I talked to him while he was out there. He was like, Mom, it's so sick. All their sticks are engraved and all their like, this is where I want to be. But we thought he was going to be in Omaha for at least 2 years, maybe three, because he was only a sophomore in high school.
Exactly.
He needed three more years of high school.
Mm-hmm.
So... but at the end of that, after he did that camp that June, then they called and said, we want to make a change in that position. We want to bring him in.
Wow.
So you know, it was a little touchy with Omaha. You know, it was touchy. But again, it's like at the end of the day, you have to make decisions that are good for your family. What's good for your path, and where, like, it might hurt feelings along the way, you know, but if you do it with honesty, like integrity,
yes,
and grace, I think you can navigate those waters and still, you know, maintain the bridges. You're not burning bridges. It's all in how you navigate relationships. People respect honesty and grace. I really believe that.
Yes, they do. And I think it goes back to that statue with the inner child. It's when people are saying awful things, it doesn't mean that you're awful. It just means that they're hurt.
Yeah.
And maybe their kid's not getting whatever opportunity your kid's getting, so they're kind of going about it that way. And 6-year-old Thatcher would say, we're just supposed to love them more.
Well, I know. And the thing is that don't make yourself a victim.
No.
Whatever is handed to you, how do you turn it for good?
Right.
Exactly. Like, don't be a victim of, they did this to me. Just go, okay, this is the circumstance.
Yes.
How do we shift this? You're going to see more pucks. You're going to learn how to be a leader. You're going to, whatever the thing is. That kid, that's one thing. He was not allowed to hang his head, you know, not on the ice
right.
and not at home. I mean, that's one thing is like, no, we're going to regroup and shift that perspective real quick. And don't engage in the drama. That's not, as a parent, we think that's our fight.
Yeah.
Is to fight for them. Instead, like that's another thing. Brent, my son's dad, big on Thatcher. You want to be in the NHL, then you need to navigate and deal with your coaches. We never talked. We didn't deal with the coaches.
Nice.
Thatcher, we never carried his hockey bag or his sticks.
There you go. Yep.
I mean, those are the details.
Yep.
That's the difference between, and I'm just saying that in life.
Yes.
You know, the difference between good and great is not very big.
No, it's not. No.
It's not. And I think those are the things. Now I see more parents wanting to do everything for the, like.
Everything. I mean, I did not want my son to go away, no. But it wasn't because I wanted to do everything for him. It was because I wanted to still be in his life and guide him where he needed it.
Trust me.
I mean, he's I've made him do his own laundry since he was, had been 11. And at his new billet house, God bless her, she's doing all the boys' laundry. There's two teammates. Yeah. He himself and another teammate living there. And I just looked at her and was like, oh my gosh, he's never going to want to come home because I do not do his laundry.
Yeah.
So God bless her for doing that.
Good. You know, you train. Brent and I really took seriously our role as a parent is training him to be a self-sufficient adult.
Right.
And when he got in my car when he was 12, I was picking him up from junior high, and we were driving along talking about whatever. And he goes, oh, by the way, I'm going to be leaving home early, and I need to get to a hockey-centric environment. And I was like, I'm like, the frick is this kid talking
right.
about?
Right. His maturity level is player. Off the roll.
I got home that day and I called his dad and I was like, you're brainwashing this kid to leave home early? Like, there's more to life than hockey, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, no, Danielle, he said the same thing to me. I think we need a family meeting. He goes, I don't know. Maybe it's his coach. Somewhere he's getting this. So we would always call family meetings more like, we need to get everyone on the same page.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what, though? Yeah. Sometimes in families, you're not on the same page, and it's okay. People are at different points in their journey as individuals.
If you're divorced or not divorced.
Yeah, no.
If you parent, if you're co-parent, you're co-parenting, whether you're divorced or not.
Exactly, yep.
That is the deal with that. And, you know, luckily, at that point, when that went down, Brent was like, we got to get serious. If he does leave home, if he gets stuck in the airport, he needs to know how to book a flight.
Yes.
He needs to know how to navigate the signs. He needs to know how to call an Uber or you know, all that, that mm-hmm. we just shifted into. And sure enough, I don't know how old he was. He was with Team USA, and I think he was maybe 16 at this point. I don't think he was fit. He might have been 15. I don't know. But he was somewhere in Czech Republic, and they had finished their tournament, and they were flying home, and all the boys went to Germany. But then from there, they all went to wherever they're from, because, you know, so a couple kids went to New York, and then some kids went to Minnesota and Michigan and Colorado. Only one kid was catching the flight to California, and his flight got delayed by a day and a half.
Oh, my gosh. What did he do?
He got stuck in a foreign country, and all that training. He called me not till he got to the freaking hotel. He changed his flight, caught a cab, got to a hotel, and then he called me, goes, I just didn't want you to worry, but I got it all handled. And I was like, I'm going to throw up. I'm throwing up in my mouth right now. I was just like, I'm not going to survive. This is not, he's only, I'm not going to survive.
Right. With his kids. Oh my gosh. That's crazy. Yeah. We spent a couple of hours, 3 or 4 days in a row, downloading the essential apps and getting him all set before he goes, in case he ever got stranded somewhere, you know, and so that he maybe could navigate it. So I think that's a good lesson for parents to know, is you've got to, there was a show called American Housewife. I loved it. And
oh, I never saw it.
Oh my gosh. It was the greatest show. It was this suburbia that was this, you know, very wealthy suburb area, but this particular family were not wealthy at all. They were renting like the smallest house in the place, but they wanted to be there because of the schools. Well, the mom was the sarcastic, I'm not putting up with all of these fancy people's crap kind of a girl. And this, when their daughter, their oldest kid on the show, was a senior, they had a life skills list of like 100 things that she had to learn before she could graduate and move on to college. And it was changing a tire, doing a budget. I mean, there were some funny things in there too. But I built one of those a couple of years ago of tasks and stuff, for him to learn, or I guess lessons for him to learn. And when he made this team, much like you, I'm like, I only had 2 months, whereas I thought I had 2 more years with him.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
what happened?
You have to accelerate the learning, but then you just kind of have to say, you're going to have to fly. You're going to have to figure it out. And we'll be here to help you. We'll be your place.
Yeah. And I think if they really want it, if it's their, like, if it's wired in their being, if it's a, it's like their calling, you know?
Yes.
Like, they can't not do it.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, so it's like, I don't know. It's such a fine line because everybody's different and.
Everybody is different. Yeah.
I know.
As a coach, So you, like me, we have one kid. I always admire people who have multiple kids, and each kid is extremely different, and you have to parent different for each kid, because I'm like, I could not do that. So, but you're a coach, and you have many different personalities with whom you coached and everything.
Yeah.
So you probably have a pretty good grasp on how to look at different people and give them what they need and support them in that way. Are there general categories of personality types that you've worked with, and like what's worked best for them that you might be able to share?
Yeah. Well, one, there's a couple of things for parents to know about coaches. Coaches are looking, are not looking for the things that parents think they're looking for.
Ooh.
In a tryout, in skill, in footwork. Coaches see much more. They were an athlete. More than likely, they played the sport at some level. And they're looking for a type of, I built my teams around it. First of all, attitude would be the first thing I cut, because to me, that's not coachable.
Mm, you're right. Yeah.
I want a teammate and a coachable person more than I wanted anything else. And that was the first thing I personally was always looking for. Because I could make, in volleyball, height is a big thing. You know, I'm 6 feet tall. I'm the shortest of five kids. And I was average when I played in college. I'm an average height volleyball player. In fact, I'm not considered tall. That's why they put me in the middle in high school, because in high school I was tall. But in college, they put me on the right side because I'm not tall, considered tall. My sister is 6'2". She played in college too. She was an All-American and team captain, all that out at USC. But for coaching, you know, the thing you're looking for is, you know, also, do they have a hovering parent? Can this kid make their own decisions? And that can be, parents that are overly involved can be a detriment to their athlete.
Right.
You know, when I'm cutting someone from my team, the things that I'm looking at are very different than what parents are trying. They think they know what the coach is looking at. So like in hockey, if they're not scoring every time, then it looks like, it's like, no, that's not, they're not looking at the result. And results are important, especially the higher you get.
Mm-hmm.
Your job, you're getting paid to perform.
Right.
So yes, you know, performance is big. But if as far as like tryouts and what coaches are looking for, they're looking for so many different things. I used to hand out a sheet, like when we would make a substitution, for instance, in volleyball, you know, parents would lose their mind. Why did you bring my kid out? Why didn't you put him back in?
Right.
Why did you play that kid over this kid?
Right.
But there's all this speculation and drama, and then they're voicing it to other parents. Like, why would you do that? Now this is all divisive among, you've got a parent team and you have your player team. You have two teams that you're navigating as a coach.
Mm.
It's never, you're not just navigating these athletes.
Right. And those athletes are hearing things from their parents at home.
Yeah, it's the one griping parent that's the carpooler driving all the kids home. Why did she do that? Why did they do that?
Yeah.
I don't understand. And like, don't say this to this person. It's such a nightmare.
Parents can ruin it. They just can.
They think, I mean, and I say it, I've been a parent.
Yeah.
I've been a coach. Mm-hmm. I've been an athlete. I mean, I've been all three.
Yep.
And same with my son's dad. I mean, he's been all three. He played collegiate rugby. He's coached, he's coached hockey teams. And so anyway, I think that just knowing that, really training ourselves to let our sons, our athletes, fail is where the lessons are. The strength comes through the struggle.
Yes.
Not through the edges cut off the peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. Oh my gosh, you're right.
Do you know what I mean? We think we're making it easier. And it's like, no, they actually need to fall.
They need
to fall. Thatcher would climb trees when he was a kid, and I would be like, I'm going to throw up. But I would never say to him, you're going to fall. I would never say that to him. I'd look at him and think in my head, that kid, if he falls, oh my God, he could break his neck, break his arm. Like, we're running through the whole thing.
Yeah.
But then if he'd go, Mom, look, and he's way up, I would just be like, oh my gosh, how did you do that? You're so amazing.
Yeah.
Let's go grab ice cream. Like,
yeah.
Get down. That's what I want to say. It's like, I got throw up to here.
Oh, and
I was like, but I would never do that. And I would, and when he'd come down, I'd be like, you know, you're going to be the end of me.
Yes.
And he's like, I think they kind of know, and like, they want the reaction in a way, but not in a like,
oh yeah. Well, and you get used to your kid. 'Cause our kid did that too. I remember we were standing out in our neighborhood and we had a bunch of neighbors around and we were facing this way and the neighbors were facing this way. And all of a sudden their faces were all just like, And they're like, look at your kid. And we turn around. He was 30 feet up in the air. He'd climbed a light pole to the top. And we turned around, and I wasn't even concerned. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's him. He does that all the time. I literally had zero worry, whereas I guarantee that all these parents were like, what is wrong with you? How can you not be afraid that your kid's going to fall? And I'm like,
I know.
Natural consequences if he does, but we knew he'd done that kind of stuff before, so we weren't as concerned.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously in balance, right?
Yeah.
It's like our job also is to protect our kids. And so, you know, but it's like we always say, like, you know, parents say, you know, make good choices. It's like, you know, just you do, you know what I mean?
Oh, we went to my sorority house just a few years ago. So it was a long time before I was with a sorority sister. And on their doors, they had make good choices tonight. And my friend Lisa and I looked at each other and we're like, no one ever told us that in college. And we're like, if we had seen it, we would have been like, yeah, watch this choice.
Yeah, I've got some choices for you, honey.
Yeah. So what do you think about that today? I mean, as we're talking about, you know, mental health and resiliency, you know, there is such a fear of letting our kids fail. There's such a fear that our kids aren't on the best team or at the best school or taking all the AP classes. Or there's such a fear that I feel is parent-driven onto the kids, and then that stress just compounds itself. What do you think could be an answer to kind of help people step back a little bit and just be that support, help their kids be resilient?
It's so hard because, you know, there's a balance between informing and letting them know, like, these are the options, and, you know, being a critical parent, if we tend to be critical if we had critical parents. Like, it kind of generationally just starts to come down, you know?
Interesting. Okay.
And breaking that cycle takes some self-awareness and being able to look at, really hear our words and really look at what is our motive, you know? Is them being in AP class a reflection of me?
Right.
You know, because a lot of times, like, you know, I'm so, you know, if the goal, if you're sitting down with your child and you're mapping out, okay, what schools do you want to go to? Like, what's your dream?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going, oh, you can't get in, you're not taking the right classes, you don't have good enough grades. Like, take that off the table.
Yeah.
What's your dream?
Yeah.
And then, okay, what does it take to get in those schools?
Right.
And then if you can water it, break it down like that, then I'm motivated today to take the classes I need because I know it's taking me to where I want to go. Like,
right.
Provide a thought, a train of thinking that allows, instead of just barking, you need AP classes. Do you want to go to Stanford? Do you want to play at Boston College? Do you want to play at Cornell? Well, then there's no need for the sing-songy shenanigans.
Right. No, there's not.
They need to be guy. Their brains aren't fully developed till 25.
Well,
they need help on how to think about things, even though they act like they know everything. This is the trick.
Yes.
Our teenager gets triggered by their teenager.
Yes.
Instead of me staying the adult.
Yep.
And try and just going, I know, like, and even in my head, like, I know he thinks he knows what he wants and what he's doing. And I'm going to stay at 30,000 feet and be the adult.
Yep.
I'm not going to engage in this battle with him. It's like, hey, these are the options. If you don't want to do AP, you know, ironically, Thatch in eighth grade he made the president's list. He had, I guess he must have had a 4.0 or whatever, one of the semesters. And he happened to take what got him there. He happened to take this one college credit class. Who knew? I don't know if his dad was like, you got to take this class. I don't know how that all went down.
Right.
Great. But fast forward to when he finished his NTDP year.
Right.
Now, he only had the second year of that. He didn't get both years.
Right.
And now it's what colleges need a goalie. And my son was only 17 because that season ended in April.
Right.
And all of his guys, mm-hmm. because you know how it all works.
Yeah.
They, 95s.
Yep.
Before September, yep. they graduated in 2013, where my son was yep. slated for 2014.
Yeah.
Because he was late in the birth year.
Yeah, mine's the same
which
way.
Was another reason. Yeah, yep. which was another mm-hmm. knock against them for him making teams.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
That one class.
He's having the last laugh, though, of course.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
But that one class, what did it do for him?
That one class is what allowed him to go to Boston College.
Oh, really?
They could apply that to, and he accelerated in one summer. He did his senior, he never had a senior year in high school. After NTDP, that summer, he accelerated, took an entire senior year of classes in one summer.
Oh my gosh.
And that one class counted from eighth grade, and he got into Boston College that August.
Wow.
So it was crazy. Like, you just don't know. You know, like, I think Brent was like, well, this counts toward college. You know, I remember Thatcher going, why would I need a college class credit? So there's yeah. times when it's like, hey, let's look at all the things.
Right.
You never know.
Right.
And Brent somehow found that one class
wow.
buried, and that was the determining factor whether he could go or had to go find some place to go.
Right.
And waste really a year for his development. Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, there is a balance in parenting of being a partner as a teenager. If you've done your job, you should be able to trust them. And the teenage years are where you're putting everything that you developed, you're putting everything to test. Will they be home on time? Will they, that it's not, you're not still training and punishing in those years.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It's
if
up to them.
If you've done it right,
uh-huh.
it's like, no, I trust your decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
You know where you need to be tomorrow. You know where,
you know what food you should eat and what you shouldn't.
Yeah. And the thing is that obviously they don't. And like I mentioned, their brain isn't developed,
right.
but it's like, you want to start giving them a little more of the reins and test. Some kids, people still need you to stay on them. That's how they, you know,
yeah,
so
some people,
I'm not saying
yeah,
that
yeah.
there's one way to handle, because I had my son in my situation, which was a divorce situation.
Mm-hmm.
His dad and I co-parented
mm-hmm.
Him through those years. And so, so anyway, yeah.
So then how do you think, because of all of your work around body, mind, spirit connectedness, and how could someone, if they're having a trying time, or, you know, what are some of the tools that people could use when they are going through a struggle that you've, you know, come to learn over your career?
Yeah. I would say, you know, what I do now is I run our Austin property, Body, Mind, and Spirit, and it's a program to give you tools to navigate life
nice.
As adults.
Yeah.
It's ways of how do we really, and knowing that all three are connected. And if it's like a three-legged stool, and if one of those legs is wobbly or not even acknowledged, I don't have balance.
Oh, you're so
and
right.
The one thing we know is we have a spirit within us.
Mm-hmm.
You can call it God, creator, universe, source, energy, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't trigger you.
Right.
But we have, do you know?
I do.
For the love of God.
I know. People, just stop.
That spirit is alive and well. And when we exhale and take our last breath, that spirit leaves our body. Yes. That body is considered lifeless, mm-hmm. without breath.
Right.
And this ability now to navigate and use breath and to slow down, to use meditation is a way to slow down time. It's a way to connect within. It's a way to learn and train yourself to self-soothe.
Yeah.
You know, athletes, they train for, and musicians, dancers. I don't care what the, if you want to be above average, mm-hmm. you've got to do different things than what average people are doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm trying to remember the podcast I was listening to. It was a hockey player. It was a forward. And, oh, my gosh, it starts with a K. The guy's last name. Anyway, he said that he had just started, he had just taken up meditation. He said, the crazy thing is every time I meditate before a game, I end up scoring.
Yeah.
But then he also, in the same breath, said, but I don't meditate every game. And I'm like, well, dude, you have the exact outcome that you're meditating for happen. Yeah. How could you not do it every game?
I know.
Because that, to me, that says that there's a fear inside of him of success, that if he relies on meditation as his only tool to get him to score, I think he's trying to maybe play around with it a little bit and see. But I always, when I listen to something like that, I try to figure out what is the root cause as to why he wouldn't participate in it every time.
Well, he might not fully believe it was attributed to that.
Right, right. And
he might be like, maybe it's fluky. Who knows?
Yeah.
I would need to know more from him.
Yeah.
Some of his stuff. But, meditation is a huge tool because, you know, athletes, musicians, artists, whoever it is, they train hours. My son trains 4 to 5 hours a day for, say, an hour game a week, which, you know, they play more games than that.
Right.
But he's training for scenarios. He's not just on the ice. He's in the weight room, and he has a psychologist, and he's doing ice baths, and he's meditating. He does meditate.
Yeah.
Especially with concussions. Because meditation helps change the brain.
Breathing.
It helps heal. Yeah,
breath is just so important.
It's the energy of it. It's mm-hmm. the vibration of it.
Yeah.
It's that it's slowing the brain down. There's so much. Like I teach classes on this, and we don't have time for me to. We could do it on another podcast.
Yeah.
But that ability to really look at what does it take to train every day, and whatever that thing is that you're trying to get better at, you're going to train, you're training your body to respond a certain way in a game because you don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
And what I tell people is that our game is life,
mm-hmm.
and we don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
And when we can add, like, our son's leaving home early. I mean, that was a thing for me. I grieved that for a couple of years. I didn't realize I needed to grieve it, but I've lost a lot of weight. I've really struggled. I just was sad. I had a deep sadness. I missed him. I knew I missed him, but that was just a heartache, you know?
Yes.
But this ability now to train, I drink a little more water, eat a little more clean.
Work out all the time.
Oxygen. Yeah, move your body every day.
Yeah.
All these things. So that's a big those are tools that seem really obvious, but they do make a difference. Meditation, hands down to me, number one thing. Mm-hmm. You're going to get enhanced focus, enhanced learning. It's a way to self-soothe. When you miss your flight, now you're not heightened. Mm-hmm. When someone's talking at you that is combative, you can take a breath. Your body knows what you're doing. It's like, no, I'm going to think clearly. I'm going to be cool, you know, in these situations because we don't know what's coming in life. And now I have a tool. When I take a deep breath, my body knows, oh, yeah, we relax when we take a deep breath. You're just consciously training your body to respond to long breath.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's interesting because I'm a type AAA personality. I'm always going, 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 right? And those are the worst people for being able to meditate. And I admit it, I have tried and tried over the years. Well, I started in early June. What I do, my little morning routine, I journal, and then I work out, and then I walk my dog, and then I get my little chair, and I go sit in the grass without my shoes on so I can ground, you know, put my feet on the earth and get the energy from the earth, and then I meditate. I meditate for 2 minutes, Danielle, 2 minutes. But let me tell you, I sleep better. I feel better. Everything's more calm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to tell you, do 1 minute because you're just going to train it every day.
Yeah.
When you're walking your dog, that's a form of meditation.
Yeah. Especially because I'm hearing him breathing the whole time.
Yeah. There are a lot of things that we do that bring us into the alpha brainwave state. Mm-hmm. And that's, it can be gardening. It can be chopping vegetables. It can be doing laundry. Walking the dog, going for a walk. That's all forms of meditation. Why? Because you're slowing your breath down and your brain waves.
Yeah.
Your breath and your brain waves tandem. So you can't have slow breath and fast brain waves.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't have slow, calm brain waves and fast breath. So if your brain waves are fast and you're stressed, when you take a breath, your brain waves will match.
I'm just taking a breath right now. I'm like, it's great.
Know.
It's a little good. Nature's drug or your own body's drug.
I know.
I think that is something that we should be teaching our kids. So
I do too.
What's the best way for us to do that? I know that I've, you know, shared it with my son. He's very much like me as far as go, 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 go. But I always use it in story form. Like I told him, it was Clayton Keller was the player who talked about meditating and scoring. And So I just try and say, oh, look, this guy meditates. What do you think about that? And there's like certain quarterbacks. I can't remember. Was it Joe Burrow?
There's a lot of athletes that meditate. They just don't talk about it.
Yeah. And using those examples with our kids helps it not be like, oh, mom, I'm not going to listen to you. It's more like, oh, my idols or people who are successful in the field that I want to be doing are doing this. My CEO for my last company that I worked for was massive on meditation. And on our calendars, they would put mindfulness minutes.
Yeah.
And so it would be on there every day. Most people ignored it in the corporate world, but they put it there to remind us it's time to take some a mindful break. So
that's so good.
Yeah. We've got we have to model that for our kids from a young age, I think.
I think modeling is a big way instead of telling them what they should do and then I'm not doing it, but just start modeling it. And then when they see, oh, you seem different. What are you doing?
Yeah.
That's how you, but really, if we just stay in our lane of like, you know what, hopefully they pick it up, they're going to figure it out, but this is what I want to do for me. And they people start to see a difference. We don't need to tell people what we think they should be doing.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like, I know. I do want to tell you that I have to leave my tour in 8 minutes.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, so
I know.
The last little bit here, and then we'll come back another time to talk more about some of these tools. But last little bit, you've given some amazing advice all the way through the hockey journey. What's it like to be an NHL player's mom who's also now a new grandma? Can I say that?
I know. It's bizarre.
It's awesome.
They're both bizarre.
Yeah.
I went on because I'm jonesing for hockey season to start. Dude. And he's getting ready for, you know, training camp starts, I don't know, in a week or 2 weeks. And he's busy with this baby. I know this kid is not sleeping. My son is not sleeping right now. And so I'm just like not, I get where I'm just missing him a lot. I can't get to him. He's in Vancouver. I'm in Austin. They want time with just their little family before I meet my grandson.
Yeah.
And I respect that for sure. But I am jonesing.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. I get that way for hockey season, too.
I know.
Yeah.
I went on to vanbase.ca is the website for Vancouver store. And I was like, let's see, I'm like wanted to look at some jackets, whatever. And I pull up this one jacket and I, so, you know, down at the bottom, they go, if you like that, you might like this or this or this. And so I click on this other jacket and it comes up and it's my son in the jacket. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I know. It's so funny that I was like, oh,
that's so cute. You know, I love that. I know,
it just doesn't, you just don't stop missing your child. Mm. You don't get used to it, you know. I'll say stuff like, you know, oh my gosh, I saw you on this or you did that. Because that's why I'm on Twitter, because he doesn't tell me anything. And he'll be like, yeah, Mom, it's like, it's just, I don't know. First of all, to be the mom of a son that, you know, people say a lot, like, you must be so proud or you must be. And it's like, I'm proud of my son. It has nothing to do with hockey.
Exactly.
Nothing.
Nothing.
I love this boy. I love who he is as a person. I love that he's okay going, I'm not perfect. I love that he's down home. I love that he loves his family. Yeah. I love his wife.
Yeah.
Oof. I love that she loves him like I do.
Yeah.
You know, I love that they want their little family before anyone else comes in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I love watching it. I wish I could go to every single game.
Oh, I was going to ask you that.
I know. It kills me. Yeah. Honestly, it's been killing me since he went to Omaha.
I bet. Yeah.
Because even those, his dad and I, what we did at that time was we each went out once a month, but we alternated. So every 2 weeks he had someone out there. I told you that before.
Yes. Yes.
So I did get to see games at least once a month.
Perfect.
So I did set that as a goal this year that I see him play every month, wherever that is.
Great.
But
that's good.
I love being his mom. It's fun that he's in a season right now that he's happens to play in the NHL. And so I get to go see him at work.
Yes.
So I love going to see him at work. I love to see him when he's practicing work. I can't get enough of him, to be honest. And it's just, I just love that boy. Well, so,
he sounds incredible. I hope one day I'll get to meet him because he just sounds like a really well-rounded, down-to-earth, good human. And would love to
Well, if
to
I can get to the Nashville game, maybe we can.
There we go. Come on over. Yeah. We'll go hit the honky tonks.
I know.
I love that idea. Perfect.
I know.
Well, thank you. You go lead your
tour.
You're welcome. Next time we're going to talk about the Institute, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
All things there.
Sure. You know, you can call me. I am a well of information, honestly, what I do here. And I'd love to.
Perfect. We'll take care of that then. Yeah. We'll get that done.
I know.
Thank you, Danielle. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with our listeners. And congratulations on your new status as a grandma. And
thank you.
I'm super excited to have gotten to know you.
Thank you. Me too. I hope to talk to you soon.
Oh, you will.
Yeah.
Thanks, Danielle.
Take care, Julie.
Bye.